trees. It was Martin Larch. He slowed as he approached the house, and his eyes sought mine.
They've found him. Both boys, actually. Little Joel Harris was up there too. He ran off from his granddad and hid with Edwin.
He passed a broad hand over his forehead, and I realised suddenly that he knew them all. Ruth, Vera, Dominic, Michael. Martin Larch had probably known them all since he was a small child himself.
The boys had locked themselves in the tower, he said. Michael just got the door open, got them out.
I brought my hands to my cheeks. And they're okay, the boys. He straightened his shoulders.
They're fine. More than can be said for you, I think. Did someone get you a glass of water?
I just want to go home, I said. Michael appeared from the back of the garden then, leading Edwin and Joel by their hands. A brief surge of strength flooded into my limbs, and I struggled to my feet as they approached, holding my arms out toward Edwin. But Dominic ran from the trees behind them and caught up with them before they reached me. His face was white, but his eyes flashed as he scooped Edwin into his arms. The little boy buried his face into his father's shoulder. Dominic swept past me as if he didn't see me, disappearing into the house with his son. I sank down again. Martin nodded.
I saw your suitcase and your letter. We'll get you home as soon as we can. London, isn't it?
He placed one large hand on my shoulder as I tried to bring my breathing under control.
It's the shock, miss. I think you'll feel better when you're home. I'm sorry about Mrs. Mays. I really am. They'll send someone to your home in London tomorrow to take a statement.
And then Vera emerged from the trees, like an apparition from a nightmare. A police officer supported her on one side, and a paramedic on the other. Her mascara ran in streaks down her face, and her mouth was skewed to one side. Her faltering steps brought her steadily closer. A tremor seized my neck muscles, and the more I tried to hold my head still, the more unsteady it became. I had to tell her. I had to claw into Vera's pain at this awful moment and tell her the truth about the new Summerborn twins. I wasn't strong enough to carry the secret away with me unshared. She stepped up onto the patio. Vera, I said. She stumbled sideways, the police officer dipping a shoulder to steady her. Her head swung in my direction, her gaze somewhere near my feet. The babies, I said. I need to tell you something. Her expression didn't alter. I wasn't sure she could hear me. I'm sorry, I said, a little louder. The words scraped in my throat. About everything, but the babies. Vera raised bloodshot eyes to mine, and for a second her brow lifted as if she was forming a question. Whose babies are they? I opened my mouth, searching for the right words. Then the paramedic cleared her throat, and suddenly, Vera's expression tightened.
No,
she said. It was like ice sliding over my skin. I swallowed. They're not... She lurched toward me, her face contorted, and I gripped the chair, pressing myself back into the cushion.
I said no,
she hissed. Her face loomed over mine.
You have nothing to say to me.
I stared at her, my chest tight. Her gaze bored into mine. I was unable to look away.
You don't belong here,
she said, and her voice dropped further as she leaned even closer.
You have nothing to say that I want to hear. Get out of my house.
The police officer supporting her frowned at me as she and the paramedic helped Vera straighten and shuffle away into the house. A gaggle of neighbours stood transfixed on the lawn, their lips parted, their eyes wide. Martin paused by my chair and lowered his voice so he wouldn't be overheard.
Don't take it personally, he said. She's lashing out. She'll talk to you in good time, I'm sure.
I shook my head. I knew now that Vera would never talk to me about this, would never agree to listen. She must have suspected that something was amiss, but that expression on her face told me everything I needed to know. Vera wanted these babies. She needed these babies, and she would do everything in her power to keep them. The truth was unnecessary, irrelevant, when weighed against Vera and her summer-born twins. A while later, Martin told me a taxi had arrived for me, and he carried my suitcase out to the lane where it waited. Two ambulances purred on the driveway with their back doors open, a baby being examined in each. Martin placed his broad hand on the top of my head as I ducked into the taxi's back seat. The driver was the same man who'd delivered me from King's Lynn Station 11 months earlier, but neither he nor I acknowledged it. I closed my eyes as we pulled away, but the image of Summerbourne's honey-coloured bricks bathed in swirling blue light haunted my dreams from that night onward. Ruth was dead. Kiara was taken. Dominic had no idea that Seraphine wasn't his. Vera had met both Danny and Seraphine, but I suspected a seed of doubt about their identities had been planted in her mind. And as for Alex, down the road in his cottage, falling in love with a baby that would never be reclaimed, but who wasn't his. What had I done to Alex? It's best for the children, I told myself, repeatedly, as the taxi bore me away. I was convinced that Kiara would be doted on by Alex, and I had to trust that Danny would be safe alongside Edwin and Seraphine, his half-brother and his non-sister, within the golden walls of Summerbourne. I had to believe that Vera, Dominic, and Alex would always protect those children as if they were their own.
33. Seraphine. Laura's fingers curl around her locket while she talks, but they return to her lap when she stops. We sit in silence as her final words sink in, and I suspect we are all trying to process the same mental image. Pulses of blue light on yellow bricks. The two babies that half belonged, the one baby that was taken. Laura rests her gaze on the coffee table in front of her while she waits for us to gather our thoughts, and I blink with recognition. I have seen this same stillness in Danny when he's preparing for me to grill him for information.
And did the police question you the next day? Kiara asks eventually.
Laura nods. They came to see me at Mum's. I was in bed. I told them I didn't know why Ruth had run to the cliffs. I didn't know which private doctor she had seen in London. I didn't know what had upset her.
Alex passes a hand over his eyes. And Dad never knew I wasn't... I ask, my heart squeezing when I say his name, as if I'm betraying his memory. I am not the betrayer, I remind myself.
Laura's forehead creases. I really don't think so. I don't think the possibility you might not be his would ever have crossed his mind. And you never told anyone? Danny asks. He doesn't look at her directly. You never tried to get us back? Laura's hand creeps up to her locket. After Vera wouldn't listen to me, I thought, what would I achieve by telling anyone? I had nothing to offer you, either of you. Beaky would have kicked me out if I'd taken you back there. You were better off where you were, with people who could look after you. And after the first year or two, I mean, how could I? Danny grunts. So you what? Moved on with a clear conscience? Laura gazes at him, but he won't meet her eye. Do you have other children? Kiara asks. No, I... Laura presses herself farther back into her chair. I stayed inside at my mum's house for months afterward. I didn't tell them anything about you, of course. I literally stayed in bed for weeks. I didn't care about anything. I didn't have any emotions about anything. She breathes deeply in and out. My mum was so worried. At one point, she asked my aunt to come and see me. But they're twins, my mum and my aunt, and they'd barely spoken in years, and it just made it worse, reminded me what I'd done, what I'd lost. What about your exams? Edwin asks. 3 A's, she sighs. But that was it. I couldn't face going out to the shops for a long time, let alone the thought of moving to another city, starting a degree course. I got a job with a local company eventually, when I started feeling stronger. In a small office, part-time at first. It took me another year to save up enough money to move out.
And after that?
Alex asks. Laura shakes her head at him wordlessly. The silence lengthens, but just as it seems she's going to offer no further reply, she opens her mouth.
I've been alone ever since, she says.
Alex leans back and closes his eyes as if he's in pain. Edwin is hunched on his chair at Laura's side, glancing frequently at the phone on the coffee table. He spoke to Martin briefly while I was persuading Danny to come back inside earlier, and Martin told him he might be allowed a short visit with Vera before the end of the day. I know Edwin's desperate to see her, but I'm not sure I'll want to go with him, and I doubt Danny will either. Danny shifts restlessly on the sofa next to me, as though he's considering leaving again. I reach out and touch his arm, but he shakes me off, turning on me.
You know this is all your fault, don't you?
His eyes are red-rimmed, furious.
You heard what Martin said. Vera was here, arguing with Dad, and then she...
He waves a hand. Edwin's voice is sharp.
Danny, stop!
Danny ignores him and continues to glare at me.
I bet Dad was dreading having to tell us I wasn't Ruth's son. But because of you, he felt he had no choice. If he didn't say anything, he knew Vera would give Summerborn to me and then you'd make all our lives hell. If you weren't so fixated on this bloody house, there wouldn't have been an issue and they wouldn't have argued and Vera wouldn't have...
Danny!
Edwin roars. My jaw hangs open. The injustice is like a slap to the face.
Take that back, Edwin says to Danny. We're not discussing what Gran's accused of until we know the facts. And none of this is Seraphine's fault.
Joel slides his hand over mine and I lean against him, keeping my eyes on Danny as he breathes rapidly, inches away from me, curling and uncurling his fingers. He won't look at me, and my chest feels too tight. And I fight back tears.
Edwin's right,
Alex says suddenly, and even Danny looks at him, startled. I hold my breath. Is Alex about to defend me? Can I bear it if my stranger father has to protect me from the twin brother I have lost all claim to?
None of this was Seraphine's fault, Alex says. It was all Vera's fault.
Danny rocks in his seat. And it's almost as if he's nodding. Joel's arm is warm against mine, and I close my eyes for a moment, thinking about the charges against Vera. Do you really think that? I say, and I try to look directly at Alex, but it's easier to let my gaze skip to each of the others. I mean, really? Can you really believe Vera would have done those things? Edwin opens his hands in a pleading gesture.
Come on. We need to be on Gran's side. Who'll defend her if we won't? What chance will she have? There are no witnesses. No one saw any of it.
Next to me, Joel clears his throat.
Actually, that's not quite true.
Edwin stares at him.
What? That no one saw any of it, Joel says. That day, we hid in the tower. Do you remember? Your mum and your gran and my granddad, they were all shouting. Your gran told my granddad to go away, and he did.
but we hid in a tower, you and me.
Edwin frowns.
The robin.
Joel's voice is soft.
We locked ourselves in. They were shouting, screaming at each other, Ruth and Vera. We were scared. You stayed at the bottom, Edwin, but I went up to the top and I saw them.
The robin's dead, Edwin says slowly.
That's what Gran was shouting.
And Theo's dead. I can't lose another one.
He leans back on the chair.
Robin, Mum's brother who died.
Joel sighs.
I don't remember that.
What then? Edwin says.
What did you see from the top?
The thing is, Joel says, I don't remember it. But last night, after Martin found out about Vera arguing with your dad, he dug out all the statements from when your mum died, and he came to see me because he found something that Grandad had said.
Go on, Edwin says.
When Grandad was putting me to bed that night, just a few hours after your mum died, I told him I saw...
Joel raises his palms.
Apparently, I told him I saw your gran push your mum over the edge.
Edwin stares at him.
I'm sorry, Joel says.
Edwin makes an effort to relax his muscles, forcing his shoulders down.
That's what Martin meant by reviewing old evidence, Edwin says eventually. Hardly something that would stand up in court. The word of a 4-year-old child, reported by a man known for telling tall stories.
Joel doesn't flinch.
I know, he continues to look Edwin in the eye. And maybe I was wrong. Maybe what I saw was your gran trying to catch your mum. The police evidently dismissed it at the time.
Edwin tilts his head back, thinking. Next to me, Danny shakes his head.
Alex clears his throat. You know, Vera always was the pack leader. She must have been so happy when Dominic told her the family had twins again. If Ruth told her, on the cliffs, that she'd only had one baby, that she'd done something terrible, Vera must have seen her dream of having new twins at Summerbourne about to be snatched away from her.
Kiara stares at him as if she hardly knows him.
That doesn't mean she pushed her.
Alex has the grace to look uncomfortable. I study him surreptitiously. This man is my father. He loved my mother, and he fought with her over me. I drop my gaze when I realize Kiara is watching me. When Alex speaks again, he focuses only on Joel, as if finally remembering who he is or who he was all those years ago.
Your grandfather, Alex says. Michael. He still lives here?
What did he say about his old statement when Martin dug it out?
Joel tenses.
I twist my hand under his so I can hold on to him.
He wasn't lucid, Joel says. He has dementia. He rambled on about twins and witches' cloaks and stolen babies.
He lifts his chin and looks at me rather than at Alex.
It made me think Grandad's obsession with the twin stories and people falling over the cliff. I think that's where my nightmares about Theo came from. I mixed up my memories of seeing your mother fall with Grandad's stories and started worrying that everything was my fault.
I squeeze his hand, not knowing what to say. Perhaps if one good thing comes from all this, it will be that Joel can finally put the gruesome childhood tales about our family behind him.
Poor Michael, Laura says.
Edwin makes a noise in his throat.
Just let's remember, he says. Like Joel said, Michael's statement might not reflect the truth. Gran might have been trying to catch Mum.
I don't think so, Alex says. The dining chair rocks backward as Edwin leaps to his feet. He looms over Alex, his fists curled.
That's because you want to pass the blame, Edwin snarls.
It's your fault Mum was out there in the first place. Gran had no reason to push her. Much more likely she jumped because of you.
Hey, Joel springs up and catches hold of Edwin's arm.
This isn't helping.
Kiara shrinks farther into her corner of the sofa, away from both Edwin and Alex. Her eyes wide, Edwin takes a step back.
I agree with Alex,
Danny says suddenly. Edwin turns on him.
You're talking about Gran here.
Danny's voice is a roar.
She's not my grandmother.
Edwin sways as if he's been punched. Laura holds a hand over her mouth. I feel all alone suddenly, with Joel up by Edwin and Danny radiating fury on the sofa next to me. Danny is so sure Vera's guilty, and Edwin is so desperate to believe she isn't. I feel trapped in the middle, uncertain and isolated. Kiara looks across at me.
Do you think she did it?
Kiara asks me.
Do you think she killed them? Your mum and your dad.
I want to hug her for calling him my dad. The others look at her and then look at me. Danny's real twin sister will be much better for him than I ever was, I think. I draw a shuddery breath.
I don't know, I say.
She said she knew something about us wasn't right, but she never knew exactly what. Why would she go to such extreme lengths when she didn't even know what the secret was?
Because she was frightened,
Laura says quietly, curling her fingers around her locket again.
Vera was frightened that if the truth came out, whatever it was, it would tear your family apart.
There is a pause, and then Danny says, in a voice that starts off low but swells to fill the room.
Well, it looks like she was right!
I stand up then, and I look from Danny to Edwin, and I am filled with more certainty than I've felt about anything since Dad died. We need to talk to Vera, I say.
Ring Martin again, Edwin. If she's innocent, she needs a chance to explain. If not, we deserve to know the truth.
34. Seraphine. Martin is waiting for us at the imposing red brick police station in King's Lynn, and he accompanies us into the interview room where Vera sits. Her back is straight and her chin is high. I try to read her expression, but my heart thuds painfully every time I come close to meeting her gaze, and I find myself scrutinizing the rest of the room instead. The camera in the corner, the mug of pale tea by Vera's elbow, the row of three unpadded chairs that we hover behind. It's uncomfortably warm in here. Vera draws her face up into a smile.
Darlings,
she gestures at the mug.
They've run out of Earl Grey, can you believe it?
Sit down, please,
Martin tells us.
Mrs. Blackwood, you have 10 minutes?
We waste the first 60 seconds in silence, and I stare at my hands in my lap. It takes all my will not to leap up and run out of the room, and I have to remind myself that I can do that at any point if I want to. Vera can't. Vera has no option but to stay here and endure this. And then she speaks.
I admit it.
Martin shuffles his feet in the corner of the room, and Vera shoots him an annoyed look.
Oh, for goodness sake, Martin, not your ridiculous charges, she snaps. The sooner we get those dropped, the better. No.
She composes herself.
I admit I wanted to persuade Laura not to talk to you, because I was afraid she knew something about you, something about your birth.
I was just trying to protect you.
As far as I'm aware, that isn't a crime.
I glance at Edwin, wondering if he'll say something, but his expression is watchful, guarded. Vera sighs.
I always knew it was possible that one of you wasn't Ruth's.
after what she said on the cliffs. But it didn't matter, don't you see? I didn't want to know the details, and I certainly didn't want Laura telling you the details.
She pauses, twists her rings.
But I admit I went about it in a...
She pauses again and tilts her chin a fraction higher.
In a poorly thought-out way, which I'm sorry for, but I certainly didn't hurt anyone on purpose. A poorly thought-out way.
Danny makes an incredulous noise in his throat.
You dropped a stone on her head. You tried to set her on fire.
When Vera looks at him, she ignores his words entirely, and if anything, her expression is wistful.
My summerborn summerborns, she says, and she smiles. You know, I was sure at first that Seraphine must be Ruth's baby. She was out there with Ruth on the cliffs when I got there. And I was frightened when Ruth said she'd done something terrible, that maybe she'd stolen you, Danny. From a stranger, from the travellers, I didn't know. I listened to the news every night for months, waiting for a kidnap story, waiting for the police to swoop and seize you.
Danny shudders. I glance at Edwin again, wondering if we should tell Vera the truth right now. But I want to hear what she has to say first. My new knowledge of our identities is painful, but my uncertainty over Vera's guilt or innocence feels like a heavier burden in this stuffy little room.
You were so tiny and weak at first, Vera tells Danny. I worried about who you were, where you'd come from. But then, as you grew, I changed my mind. You looked so much like Edwin and Theo, it was obvious you were their brother. I relaxed, began to forget. And you, Seraphine.
When Vera turns her gaze to me, her smile broadens, and I'm shocked to feel tears rolling from my lashes.
You reminded me so much of Ruth at times, she says. So I made myself forget. I was desperate to forget all those doubts I had at the beginning. Of course you were both our children.
Danny clears his throat next to me.
Tell us what happened with Dad.
Vera nods.
We did argue that morning, it's true. I didn't want to say after the accident, because I realised how it might look. It seemed unnecessary.
She sighs.
Dominic told me there was something he wanted to tell us all, before I made a decision about Summerborn.
She glances at Martin and I am gripped by a sudden cold suspicion that she's calculating exactly how much of the conversation Ralph might have overheard.
Dominic mentioned Laura's name, she says. I was worried. I may have raised my voice a little, but only because I wanted him to tell me straight away. And he insisted on waiting until we were all together. That's what Ralph must have heard. The silly boy parked up by Michael's cottage, so we didn't hear him coming.
And then?
Danny says.
I felt bad immediately, of course, as soon as I'd sent Ralph away. I apologised to Dominic. And then we discussed party plans for the weekend. The argument was forgotten.
Edwin frowns.
And what did you think Dad's announcement was going to be?
Vera's gaze slides to me.
You thought he was going to tell us I was Laura's daughter, I say, didn't you?
In the seat next to me, Danny hangs his head. Vera takes a deep breath and appears to reach a decision.
I have to admit, I used to wonder. Ruth said someone was coming for her baby, and Danny looked so much like Edwin. And your colouring is similar to Laura's, Seraphine, and tall, long-bodied women like Laura can sometimes hide their pregnancies. I thought perhaps Ruth agreed to take you on, but Laura's boyfriend, whoever he was coming to claim you for himself.
My heart knocks erratically. Which of us is going to tell her the truth? Vera blinks at me.
But it didn't matter.
and Laura had the good sense to stay well away from Summerbourne until now. Until you tracked her down.
The events of the past couple of weeks jostle in my mind, and I think of the wadded shreds of paper I pulled from that smelly park trash bin. The letter, I say. Edwin and Danny both look at me. Vera inhales sharply through her nose.
You wrote that to Laura, didn't you?
I stare at her, and even now, I don't want to believe it. I want her to laugh, to explain, to say we'll get this all sorted out, don't worry. I dig my nails into my palms. You took her address out of my handbag and wrote her that letter, threatening her daughter. You meant me, didn't you? Vera twists her rings and then stops.
I panicked, she says eventually. I wanted to make sure she didn't talk to you. She tried to tell me something that day about you two, after Ruth fell, and I wouldn't listen. But when you said you'd tracked her down, I tried to work out what was she most likely to say. And I thought, your hair, your skin tone. Seraphine, perhaps you really were her daughter. I'm so sorry, I was trying to protect you.
Protect me? I shove my chair back as I stand. Vera begins to rise too, but at a gesture from Martin, she sinks back onto her seat.
Yes, she says. You wrote that message on the mirror.
Edwin and Danny both turn in their seats to stare at me, bemused. You burned that word into the grass.
Your father,
Vera says, then checks herself. She is no longer looking at any of us.
Dominic was fine when I left him. We parted on good terms. I decided to take in the view along the cliffs before heading back to London. I rang Ralph from the boatyard and he gave me a lift back to the station.
There's a rhythm to her speech that makes her words sound rehearsed. I sway on my feet, waiting for either of my brothers to say something, but they remain silent. Martin is a large, calm presence in the corner, taking it all in.
Dominic was fine when I left him,
Vera says again. Danny gets to his feet then, taking his time, watching her.
I don't believe you.
Vera gives him a pleading look.
When you rang me about the accident, I was back in London. I was so shocked. I always worried about Dominic using that ladder, but I never imagined. And then, by the time I got back to Summerbourne, the morning's events were the last thing on my mind.
I don't believe you.
Danny's voice is louder this time.
He was fine when I left him,
Vera insists.
You have to believe me.
And Mum?
Edwin asks, his voice cracking.
Martin has old statements that say,
he swallows,
someone witnessed you push her.
Vera looks from him back to Danny.
Your mother fell or jumped. It happened so quickly, I didn't.
She wasn't my mother,
Danny snarls. Edwin leaps up then and grabs Danny's arm, turning him away from Vera.
Danny, wait!
I meet Martin's gaze, and his expression is alert, calculating. I have no idea whether we've had 4 minutes or 40 in this overheated box of a room.
What do you mean?
Vera pales. She reaches trembling fingers toward the mug of tea, but doesn't touch it.
Who?
Danny stutters, seemingly unable to name his biological mother.
Seraphine's your real grandchild,
he says in the end.
She's Ruth and Alex Kaimal's daughter.
Vera stares at him, then looks at me. She shakes her head, and then her focus turns inward, as though she's scanning her memories,
searching for something to prove or disprove this.
Gran, Edwin says. Dad and Laura. Danny's their son.
Vera draws in a breath, her gaze flicking around the room, looking at anything but us while she thinks. Danny draws himself up and steps closer to the table. He bends forward, bringing his face down to Vera's level. And finally, she looks at him.
You killed them, didn't you? Danny says.
Mom and Dad. Ruth and Dad.
Vera's voice is strained.
No. I don't believe you.
Danny draws a shaky breath.
I hope they lock you up and throw away the key.
Martin's colleague stands aside as Danny marches from the room. The anguish in Edwin's eyes as he looks at Vera before setting off to follow Danny makes my heart ache. I glance over my shoulder as he tugs me through the door, but Vera isn't watching us leave. Her head is turned away, her expression distant. She's already retreated inside herself. Only Martin watches us go, and there is a gleam of satisfaction behind his sympathetic expression. I don't know how helpful our visit has been to the investigation into Vera's alleged crimes, but I suspect the glimpse it's given Martin into the puzzle of the Summerborn twins will make up for any official disappointment. Martin's colleague closes the door softly behind us, and we flee to the fresh air and freedom of the car park. Edwin drives, and I sit in the passenger seat. Danny doesn't speak a word to either of us on the journey home. 35. Seraphine. I stand with Joel in the Summerbourne Hall. He has offered to drive Laura back to her home in London tonight, to give us three, Edwin, Danny and me, a chance to sit down together and talk. Not that Danny is aware of this plan, since he stalked off toward the cliffs as soon as we got back from the police station, declaring he wanted nothing more to do with any of us. If he's not back by dusk, I will go and find him. Laura is taking a stroll around the garden with Edwin before she leaves. For old time's sake, she said, although I suspect she wants to talk to Edwin alone. I'm surprised to find this doesn't bother me. The truth is exposed, and we each have to process it in our own way. And anyway, I'm inclined to see Laura less as a threat now, and more as an ally. Alex and Kiara are out on the driveway, transferring items from Kiara's car to Alex's. They're going to drive back to Leeds together tonight and arrange for Kiara's car to be collected during the week. If I turn my head now, I can see them through the hall window. Kiara closing the trunk of her car and clutching a bag against her chest. Alex reaching an arm out as he walks toward her.
You'll be okay, Joel says,
and I turn away from the scene of my father hugging the daughter he wishes was his. Joel stands at the bottom of the stairs, his thumbs tucked into his jeans pockets, watching me. The shape of him makes me think I would fit against him perfectly if I stepped closer. My cheek against his chest, his arms curved around my back. But a swell of memories makes me keep my distance. My shame at believing he might have been Laura's attacker. My horror that I caused the injury that gave him his scar. My lingering embarrassment about the night I kissed him and Ralph Luckhurst punched him. A thought occurs to me. It's Ralph's fault, I say slowly, and then I wince. Of all the people to bring up, of all the names to mention. Joel tilts his head as if he hasn't heard me properly.
What is?
I cross my arms.
It's Ralph's fault Laura was injured, isn't it? If he'd told the police, when he heard about Dad's accident, that Vera was here that morning...
Joel nods warily.
Yeah, It might have changed things, I suppose, but it's not like he lied. If the police didn't ask him, I could have asked him.
I swipe a tear on my cheek, annoyed by it. If I talked to him, it was too late for Dad, but I could have stopped Laura being hurt.
Seraphine. Joel waits until I look at him directly. Ralph is responsible for his own actions. Don't blame yourself for any of this.
But we used to be friends, and I didn't know how to keep that when we stopped. I wave a hand, appalled that I'm even attempting to describe my relationship with Ralph to Joel. I take a deep breath.
What if he didn't say anything to the police because of me?
Joel frowns.
Why? To protect you from finding out what your grandmother had done.
No, I mean, maybe he didn't say anything because it was my family, because he didn't want anything to do with me.
Joel unhooks his thumbs and steps toward me, but I step back and he stops.
Ralph owes your gran a lot of loyalty, Joel says. She's always helped his family out, hasn't she? Supporting Helen, Daisy's job.
I'm sure he was just... He didn't want to cause her trouble. He was just putting his own family's needs first.
A noise outside makes me glance again through the window. Alex and Kiara are peering into the trunk of Alex's car now, heads close together.
You're looking for ways to blame yourself, Seraphine, and you mustn't, Joel says.
I turn back to face him.
Doctor's orders, he says. I mean it.
There's something in the warmth of his tone that eases the ache in my muscles. I frown at the scar on his jaw, the lift of his eyebrows, the hint of his smile.
You saved her, didn't you?
I say.
Who?
Laura.
I put her in danger, but you saved her.
Well, I found her, yeah.
I shake my head. You did more than that. You saved her life. Joel steps closer to me, and his voice is soft.
I guess I was in the right place at the right time.
He reaches out slowly and takes my hand in his.
And do you know why?
I watch his thumb stroke across my wrist. Because of Michael, I say.
Because of you, he says. I could have waited for Grandad to come home, but I thought I'd go and look for him because I wanted to clear my head. Not because I was particularly worried about Grandad, because I was thinking about you.
I look up at him, trying to resist the hypnotic nearness of him, trying to puzzle out his meaning.
Are you trying to convince me that Laura was saved because of me?
I ask him.
Nice try, but I'm not that gullible.
His widening smile reminds me forcibly of carefree childhood days, heading out to pick blackberries, racing down the lane on our bikes, pedals pumping, the wind in our hair.
What can I say?
He shrugs, and he's impossibly handsome with this glint in his dark eyes, this almost laugh on his face.
It's the truth. I was in the right place at the right time because I was thinking about you.
I shake my head at him, but I can feel my own smile responding to his.
I'm always thinking about you, he says.
And then I kiss him. I kiss Joel Harris and he kisses me. And it turns out we do fit together perfectly. Joel pulls away first. The front door creaks on its hinges behind me, and I press my forehead against his chest for a moment. Blackberries, hearts pumping, the wind in our hair. I don't want to see anyone but Joel.
Seraphine.
It's Alex. My father. When I turn, his gaze drops to the floor tiles between us. I feel disconnected when I look at him. And I see a reflection of my bafflement in his own eyes. Kiara stands just behind him on the doorstep, and she makes an attempt to smile at me. I squeeze Joel's hand tighter and wait for somebody to speak.
Is Danny not back? Kiara asks.
No, I say. Edwin and Laura are in the garden, Joel says. Would you like me to go and get them?
No,
Alex says. His clipped tone echoes mine, and we make eye contact for a split second. I almost want to laugh. Is this what we have in common? A genetic tendency to snappiness? Kiara gives Alex a sideways look. I get the impression she's tempted to contradict him, to insist on saying goodbye to her newly found mother and half-brother, but it's clear that Alex is desperate to get away from us all. And in the end, she doesn't argue. She looks tired.
Can we ring you? She asks me. In a few days, maybe.
I nod, not trusting my voice again. Alex makes a brief gesture, flexing his fingers as if under different circumstances he might offer a hug.
I'm sorry, Seraphine, he says,
and then they turn and trudge away over the gravel, and I shove the front door shut and lean against it.
You'll be okay, Joel tells me again,
and I smile at him, not because of what he says, but because he's here, with me. When they re-enter the house, Edwin fusses around Laura, checking she's taken her painkillers, insisting she accept a sandwich and a flask of tea for her car journey. You do know Joel's taking her home by car, don't you? I ask him. Not horse and wagon. Edwin gives me his stern big brother look, and the surge of relief it triggers in me takes my breath away.
I'll walk down to Joel's car with them, Edwin says. Check whether Michael needs anything. When I get back, we can go and find Danny.
I happen to have spotted Danny through the window when I fetch Laura's handbag from the sitting room. He is lurking on the patio, no doubt waiting for Laura to leave before he comes back in. I nod at Edwin.
Sure, okay.
Joel curves his hand around my elbow and dips his face to mine. Remember what I said? I let my gaze run over his face, absorbing the details. I'll be okay? Exactly. He kisses my cheek. When he steps back, Laura is watching me. Her lips suggest a trace of amusement, but underneath that is a sadness that makes my heart feel heavy. She has survived being attacked, and she has met her two grown-up children, and they have left her without even saying goodbye. We study each other.
You remind me of her,
she says eventually. You're strong like your mother. I stand on the doorstep and watch them until they are out of sight. Danny makes a cheese sandwich at the kitchen table, scattering crumbs and ignoring the butter-smeared knife when it clatters to the floor. He doesn't look at me. I open two beers and follow him through to the sitting room, and I sit on the same sofa as him and pass him a bottle.
Thanks,
he murmurs, and the absence of the word sis stretches like an abyss between us. I'm sorry, I whisper. He's still the same person, but he's not my brother. We share a half-brother, different halves. That's as close as we can get.
Kiara's my sister, he says eventually.
And Laura's, I say. He waves his hand, cutting me off.
And Alex is your dad.
He finally looks at me. We stare at each other. Something shifts in his eyes then, and he drops his gaze.
Well, you got what you wanted, I guess,
he says.
What do you mean?
Summerborn.
My mouth falls open, but no words form.
She'll give it to you now, won't she?
He continues.
Once she finds out you're her grandchild and I'm not, you'll get the house you always wanted from your murderer grandmother. Congratulations.
I shake my head. Danny, that's not fair. It's not like that.
That's why you started all this, isn't it?
No. I sit forward, reach a hand toward him. That's not why. I just wanted... I'm short of breath, and I can't gather the words together. If she gives Summerbourne to me, I'll give it to you, okay? I knew something wasn't right. I just wanted to know where I came from, who I was, who I am. He tilts his head back against the sofa and closes his eyes, and we sit for a while in silence, waiting for Edwin to get back. My twin brother is not my brother. He has a new twin sister, and she's... A tear slides down my cheek. Perfect for him. The silence lengthens. The heat of the day is fading, and I rub my arms, too drained of energy to get up and find a cardigan. Eventually, Danny sighs loudly.
I guess I should have known.
What?
It's obvious, isn't it?
He rolls his head back down and shoots me a sideways look.
I always wondered why I got all the good genes and you didn't. Now it finally makes sense. I blow out a puff of air. Danny! All those hours I wasted trying to teach you stuff, trying to show you how to play cricket when you just wanted to read a boring old book on the cliffs. I should have realised then we weren't related.
I shake my head, watching him through narrowed eyes. He leans back again and gives an even more exaggerated sigh. The corner of his mouth twitches.
Thank God.
He's still the same person. Even though my vision is blurred with tears, I manage to land a blow on his arm with my cushion. He lets out a huff of a laugh.
Be very careful, I say, my voice scratchy. I'm still older than you.
He makes a dismissive noise in his throat and settles his head back more comfortably, but his expression retains the trace of a smile. I retrieve my cushion and hug it to my chest. Edwin returns and the three of us drink beer and talk as the setting sun turns the Summerbourne sitting room orange and pink. I wonder what Alex and Kiara are saying to each other on their drive home. I wonder whether Laura will contact us again, or whether any of us will contact her. I wonder whether Vera will get any sleep tonight in her cell. I wonder whether Joel is thinking about me as much as I'm thinking about him.
Did you notice the engraving on Laura's locket? Edwin asks.
Danny and I shake our heads.
It has three hearts with zigzag lines across. Like broken hearts, I guess. But why three? Who cares? Danny says, and springs up from the sofa, waving away any further talk about Laura.
He retrieves the old family photo album from the bookshelf, and as he passes it to Edwin, it falls open at the empty double page. Edwin quickly flips to the next page, and all three of us lean in to study it in silence. Danny and I were always told this was the first picture taken of us after all those months lost to grief when we were born. It's a bright winter scene, the ground blanketed in snow, and five-year-old Edwin wears a navy blue duffel coat and bright blue mittens and no hat. The bare branches of the Summerbourne orchard are visible behind him, and he holds a carrot and stands next to a noseless snowman. Instead of looking at the camera, his eyes are fixed on two babies propped up in an old-fashioned baby carriage. I have a sudden memory of Dad telling me this was the brief stage when Danny and I were the same size, when he'd just caught up with me, before he surged ahead and left me forever the smaller one. We wear red pom-pom hats, almost certainly knitted by Vera, and we're zipped into quilted snowsuits, wedged in next to each other, and we stare out at the world, at the snow, the sky, our big brother, with matching startled expressions. I run my thumb over a smudge in one corner that I never noticed before. Something yellow poking up through the snow. An abandoned toy, perhaps, or early daffodils? I can almost remember it being taken, Edwin says quietly. Danny grunts. What is it you remember exactly? The chocolate cake they gave you afterward to warm you up? Every time something makes me smile, fresh tears slide down my cheeks. It's exhausting. My thoughts are disjointed. I don't want to think about Vera and her crimes. The fact that she imagined she was in some way protecting us, protecting me, even as she wrote that warning on my bathroom mirror to frighten me. And I don't want to think about Alex tonight. And yet, how can I not? He's my father. But I'm still mourning Dad. We talk and cry and talk some more until the room is in darkness. A thin crescent gleams in the sky outside the window like a glint from a silver locket. We're still family, us three, aren't we? I say as we head upstairs.
Absolutely, Edwin says firmly.
Danny rolls his eyes.
Whatever you say, sis.
I pad away to my bedroom. The night is cooler than we've been used to, and I drag my sheets and duvet from the floor and make myself a nest on the bed, sighing as I curl up inside it to wait for the new day. We are still family, us three. I am still Seraphine. Epilogue. Seraphine. Early December 2017. Edwin helps Laura out of her coat as Joel bounds up the steps and joins them in the warm winterborne hallway. Steam from the kitchen wafts up the stairs, carrying the aroma of rosemary and garlic to the turn of the staircase where I hover in the shadows, watching them. Edwin kisses Laura on both cheeks. Joel declines to take his coat off.
I'll get going to the station, Joel says. It's a long enough journey down from Leeds. Much nicer if I can pick Kiara up rather than her getting a taxi, especially if she's by herself.
He glances up the stairs then, although he doesn't give any indication he's seen me. Laura says,
thank you, Joel.
And then, this smells so good, as she follows Edwin into the kitchen. They're discussing goose fat and oven temperatures as they pull the door closed behind them. I dash down the stairs to catch Joel before he leaves, and he's still standing by the grandfather clock, a half smile on his face, as if he was waiting for me all along. I haven't seen him often enough since I moved into Winterbourne 3 months ago. I have a long commute to work in the week, and he's been doing weekend shifts while he looks for a permanent position. He looks well today, his eyes shining, his freshly shaved skin glowing above his scarf. I stand close enough to feel the cold December air drift from his coat.
Hi,
he says.
How are you?
Good, I whisper, and then the slow widening of his smile knocks whatever else I was intending to say out of my mind. We study each other as the clock ticks.
It's great you managed to talk Danny into agreeing to this, he says eventually.
It was Brooke, really. She's good for Danny, I have to admit. She told him he has to give Laura a chance. He has to be here to support Kiara. Joel glances at the kitchen door.
But Alex is still refusing to speak to Laura?
I'm grateful that Joel still calls him Alex. I'm still prickly about Alex being referred to as my father, even though we have been talking, making tentative steps toward forming some kind of a relationship. He's struggling, I say. He told himself all those years he'd done the right thing, and now he feels guilty about my mother, guilty about me. He and Kiara are okay, I think, but the fact that Laura knew he was taking the wrong baby, it's just easier for him not to see her at the moment. Joel nods.
And you're feeling okay about today? Having Kiara and Laura here?
Well, as Brooke says, we're all related one way or another, and we might actually like each other if we give it a chance.
True.
He's so close to me, I could reach up and stroke the scar on his jaw if I wanted to.
Edrin said you've been looking at houses in the village, I say.
To be closer to Michael?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, actually.
Oh?
He pulls a face.
The old Collison's place is up for sale. Alex's old cottage.
I consider this. Where Alex set up a nursery for me and ended up taking Kiara.
Yeah.
He shakes his head. It's too weird, isn't it?
It doesn't matter. Something else will come up.
I'm going to move back into Summerbourne, I say. Vera's solicitor wrote to me a couple of weeks ago. She wants me to have the house after all. Vera is still in custody, awaiting her trial for the attempted murder of Laura. Only Edwin visits her. She continues to maintain that she knocked the stone onto Laura's head by accident and was then too shocked to rush down the staircase to help Joel carry Laura back to the house. She continues to insist that Dad was fit and well when she left him, that our mother committed suicide in front of her. Joel watches me.
You okay?
I nod. I'm coming to terms with the idea that we might never know the true extent of Vera's guilt or innocence. The Crown Prosecution Service has decided not to proceed with the other charges. Martin says there's not enough evidence in the case of Dad's fall, and really none at all in the case of our mother. Joel's pupils are large in the dim hallway.
Will Danny mind if she gives you the house?
I smile.
Can you imagine Brooke living out in the sticks?
He's fine with it. And I'm going to put it in both our names anyway, if and when it ever does legally become mine. He dips his head closer to me.
I'd better go. I don't want Kiara leaping in a taxi before I get to the station.
Do you want to come with me?
No.
I want to talk to Laura, actually, before anyone else gets here.
Okay.
He doesn't move. His gaze slips from my eyes to my lips and back again. Joel, I say. The wool of his coat over his chest is faintly damp under my hands. He runs his thumb lightly across my cheek.
Seraphine.
We kiss then. I'm still getting used to this delicious feeling of being wanted by him. Like I said, I haven't seen him often enough in the last 3 months. He claims he's been in love with me for as long as he can remember, and whenever he says this, I tell him I don't believe him. And then he smiles, his slow smile at me. And then I forget that it might not be true, and decide to believe him after all. The clock chimes and we pull apart. I have a better idea for where you could live in the village, I say. He laughs softly.
Oh, yes.
At Summerbourne, with me. The laugh is still on his lips, and I kiss him again. We're interrupted by the kitchen door opening and Laura exclaiming,
Oh, excuse me,
before she ducks back inside. Joel draws back, smiling.
I really should go.
You'll think about it?
I'll think about it, he says.
I stand for a couple of minutes after he's gone, waiting for my heart rate to settle, trying to synchronize it with the solid ticking of the clock. When I enter the kitchen, Edwin is shifting pans around on the cooktop and waves a spatula at me.
Seth, for goodness sake! Can you let Laura get to the cloakroom if you've finished canoodling with Joel?
He grins as he turns back to the stove. There's something in particular I want to ask Laura about, and I examine her in brief glances once she returns to the kitchen. She makes small talk with Edwin about the meal he's preparing, but she checks her watch frequently, and I suspect she's more nervous of hearing the doorbell ring than I am. She offers to do some washing up, but I step in front of the sink, blocking her access.
Let me show you the Winterbourne garden, I say, before the others arrive.
There's something I think might interest you. We grab our coats, and she looks curiously into the other rooms as we pass them on our way to the back door. But she doesn't ask any questions.
We shove our hands into our pockets as we stroll down the long central garden path, past the winter flowering cherry trees with their frilly pink blossoms. Autumn colours linger in the borders, and it's remarkably peaceful away from the traffic on the street.
Thank you for this, Seraphine, Laura says, for inviting me here.
There's a tension around her eyes. She's about to sit down to a meal with both her children after 25 years of them not knowing she was their mother. Impulsive actions are rare for me, but I'm still floating from seeing Joel, and I tug one hand out of its pocket and hook my arm through hers. She did help my mother give birth to me, after all. She did tell me my mother's words when nobody else could. She's taller than me, and I smile up at her briefly, and we walk along together quite comfortably. Edwin thinks it's a nice way to mark his birthday, I say. New beginnings and all that. Kiara wants to get to know you, doesn't she? And Danny, well, I'm not sure quite what to say about Danny. After weeks of emotional withdrawal, he has become fierce in his insistence that the revelation about our genetic identity won't damage our sibling bond. But I see him bristle every time Laura's name is mentioned. I blow out a puff of air. Danny will get there. You can't rush him. She nods, pressing her lips together. She glances at my necklace, a tiny gold angel on a delicate chain. This is pretty. Brooke gave it to me because of my mother, I sigh. She's a good influence on Danny. She's told him he has to at least say hello to you today. Try talking to you. I flash her a quick grin and she shakes her head, but there's a flicker of amusement in her eyes. Poor Danny, she says. And you? Have you been talking to Alex? I still experience a dull jolt in my abdomen whenever his name is mentioned. I did consider cutting Alex off, telling him I wanted no contact between us, and at my lowest moments I wondered if he might actually be relieved if I did this. But I find myself drawn to Kiara, entranced by the myriad ways in which she reminds me of Danny. And I can see that Kiara loves Alex. He's been a good father to her. I'm glad he left me behind. Of course I am. I'm glad I grew up with Dominic as my dad. Nothing that happens with Alex will ever change that. But we've met up several times now, and when we push all the complications of our family to one side, I think we do actually like each other. It surprises me how disappointed I am that he doesn't want to join us today. I realise Laura is watching me, and I grimace. Yeah, we've been talking. I went up there last week, actually. Saw both of them. It was okay.
Good, Laura says. But he's not coming today because of me.
It's a statement, not a question. He needs time, I say, but I'm not sure she's listening.
I wish.
She shakes her head as if acknowledging the pointlessness of such thoughts when it's all too late.
I wish somehow I'd managed to...
My tone is firm. It's done. It made us who we are. We can't change it. A bright-eyed sparrow tilts its head at us as we approach the final section of the garden and the structure I want to show Laura. Four curved stone benches stand in a circle, looking in toward a large sundial on a raised stone platform. It was made to tie in with the folly at Summerbourne, I say. On a smaller scale, obviously. Laura releases my arm and circles the sundial, examining the writhing stone sea serpents and the Latin inscription.
Fruere ora, she reads aloud.
Enjoy the hour, I say.
No canon.
We're a bit more restrained at Winterbourne. She rests a hand on the sundial and closes her eyes. I use the opportunity to lean closer and peer at the locket just visible between the lapels of her coat. Laura, She opens her eyes.
Your locket's pretty too, I say, stuttering slightly. Are they three broken hearts? What does it mean?
Her hand reaches for it. I used all the money I saved at Summerbourne to buy this, she says quietly. I raise my eyebrows.
But you could have used that money to move out sooner, into your own place.
She looks back at the sundial and shakes her head. I take a deep breath.
Why a locket? What's inside it?
She frowns faintly, and I half expect her to claim it's empty, but then something shifts in her expression, and I'm gripped by the conviction that I'm right. There is something inside it, and it has something to do with Summerbourne. Her eyes search mine. I have a feeling she's trying to reach a decision. She lifts the locket and passes it backward over her head, tugging the chain loose from her hair. It was so long ago, she says, and she stares down at the locket in her hand. It's silly, of course, to be so sentimental. I should let it go. She presses the tiny button on the edge of the oval, and nothing happens. I never opened it, ever, she says, after I put it in. She presses again, and suddenly the front pops up, and she pries it open. I bend closer in the chill air to peer at the contents. Overlapping paper-thin shapes, pressed flower petals the colour of pale tea with a tinge of purple. Sea lavender, Laura says, from the beach at Summerbourne.
You kept it all this time?
Alex gave it to me. I gaze down at the fragile shapes until Laura suddenly flicks her wrist. The petal remnants flutter into the breeze, spinning and disintegrating into tiny shreds of papery dust. There's a low hedge of sweet box behind the sundial seating area, and Laura considers the empty locket for a moment, and then tosses it into the dense greenery. It slithers between glossy dark leaves and disappears.
I messed everything up, she says. My whole life. I got pregnant in sixth form, and my boyfriend wanted nothing to do with it. He kicked me out. Beaky made me have an abortion.
I stare at the hedge. The three hearts. She nods. I was never a mother to any of them. Tiny white flowers nestle in the hedge, and their sweet scent rises with the breeze and drifts around us.
I was really ill afterward, she says. I missed my exams. And then Beaky made me take the au pair job to see how hard it was to look after a child, to teach me a lesson.
I picture the form from the au pair agency. Difficult circumstances at home. She looks at me then, almost smiles. But it wasn't hard. I loved it, looking after Edwin. And then I reach out hesitantly, touch her sleeve. Alex, I say.
I wasn't enough. I couldn't compete.
She swallows and gives me an apologetic look. And then Dominic. I'm so sorry, Seraphine. I messed it all up. Alex, he can't even bear to look at me now. I messed up your life, and Danny's and Kiara's. I'm so sorry. Her focus shifts, and I turn to the house to follow her gaze. Voices erupt from the back door as figures emerge, doing up coats and rubbing hands together and exclaiming. Laura grasps my arm.
I can't do this. I can't. I need to go.
Wait, no. We need to do this, Laura.
She grips onto me, and I catch hold of her free arm, and I try to summon up a courage that I can somehow transmit to her.
You're Danny and Kiara's mother, I say. They've come here to see you.
We both look across the lawn. Edwin and Joel stand on the back step. It's too far away to be certain, but I'm pretty sure Joel is looking directly at me. Danny and Brooke set off, hand in hand down the path toward us. Following close behind them are two more people, and I'm surprised to find my cheeks rising in a smile. Behind Danny and Brooke are Chiara and the guest who said he wasn't coming. My father. Alex has decided to join us at Winterbourne after all. Laura's arm twitches under my hand. If I let go of you, I ask her, are you going to run away? She manages to tear her attention from the figures on the path to frown at me, but it's not enough to hide the shine in her eyes. She shakes off my grip and turns in a slow circle, her gaze skimming over the borders, the stone seats, the sundial, the approaching people who are part of our family now. Enjoy the hour, she says. How are we supposed to do that, then? Don't ask me. She takes a deep breath. Well, we've come this far. I suppose we could give it a go. Something like a smile passes between us then, and I link my arm with hers again, and the two of us set off down the path to meet the others halfway. This is Elizabeth Sastre. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Au Pair by Emma Roos. This programme was directed by Mae Wuthrich. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Text copyright 2019 by Emma Roos. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this programme.